You're listening to the Nate Lull Podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And now, here's Nate.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I am your host, Nate Lull, and thank you for tuning in to another edition of the Nate Lull Podcast. Today is episode 80, and my guest is longtime local basketball coach and mentor, Mac Culpepper. Before I talk about Coach Mac, I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who listened in to my special feature episode, Remembering David Scott Eccleston. If you haven't checked it out yet, it's right in the full list of episodes. You can click play on it anytime. But I really appreciate all the support. That was a big project for me, and the response has been overwhelming, and I'm just so happy with the way it came out. And I just think that remembering David is something that we really need to do, and I hope you'll keep him in your thoughts going forward. So just wanted to say a quick thank you to everyone who tuned in and listened to that episode. So moving on to Coach Mac Culpepper. Again, another coach that I have met, and he isn't coaching a high school team. He is a local AAU coach. He does a lot of one-on-one training, but just a neat connection that I've been able to make, even though he's not coaching a high school team right now. And when you meet Mac, you can just tell how much he cares for the kids. He really is someone who is there to help them on the court and off the court. And he's a big teacher of the fundamentals. I know so many kids that have gone to him for one-on-one instruction, and you can really see their game get elevated and they take it to the next level when they come back on the floor the next year. So it was great today to talk to Mac about a lot of the local players that he's coaching now. When you look at some of the big names he has on his AAU team, just to name a few that he talks about today in the episode, Kaylin Marissa Campbell from Franklin. He talks a lot about Dana Stepp from Unitigo, the Perry sisters from Unitigo, Hannah Johnson from Oneonta. And he talks a lot about his former players too, players that he stays in touch with. You know, like, of course, Denise McNeely. He talks a lot about the early days with Denise. He talks about Jordan Beers from Franklin, Jessica Lang from South Courtright, Shelly Miles from GMU, all players that he has worked with and mentored over the years. So great to hear his opinion on that. And I will warn you, and Coach Mac doesn't know I'm going to say this, but this is a funny story from when he came in to record this interview. Coach Mac has a great laugh, and he's loud, and he's known for being loud on the sidelines, so we do talk about his coaching style. But he said that one thing he does when he goes to games, if one of his players wants to know that he's there, he can't whistle or anything. He goes, I just can't do it. But he has this signature noise that he makes. I'm not going to try to recreate it, but it is loud and you can hear it. And I honestly wasn't prepared for Mac to make this noise in such a small studio space. So he lets this noise go and he just keeps right on rolling with the conversation. So I do as well. And when we're all done and we wrap up and Mac leaves, my boss and all my coworkers come into my office and they're like, Nate, what the heck was going on in there? We thought something like happened and someone fainted or passed out because of this crazy noise. Like, they really didn't know what it was. So it's near the end of the episode, but you'll hear this noise and you'll just laugh. It was great. And he just, again, let it go and he just kept on rolling with it. So Mac, I love the noise and I can see why your players know that you're in the house if you make that noise. So that was great. Okay, we have to thank all our special sponsors here on the podcast, so let's get into our list here. Always appreciate their support. They include NYCM Insurance of Edmiston, Shindello Federal Credit Union of Franklin, Shenango Memorial Hospital of Norwich, the Amphenol Corporation of Sydney, Sportsfield Specialties of Delhi, Preferred Mutual Insurance Company of New Berlin, we have SFCU, the Leatherstocking Group of Cooperstown, C.H. Landers Funeral Chapel of Sydney, the Franklin Railroad Museum, Benson Agency Real Estate of Oneonta, Huff Ice Cream of Sydney, Morabito Gresham Insurance, First Priority Mortgage Loan Officer David Smith, Certified Auto Outlet of Oneonta, Gilbert Plumbing and Heating of Gilbertsville, Clark Sports Center of Cooperstown, the Delaware National Bank of Delhi, we have New York Pizzeria of New Berlin, Patriot Masonry of Otigo, Trossett Group Attorneys of Cooperstown, Waste Recovery Enterprises of Sydney, Barnard's Hometown Hardware of Bainbridge, the Rinker Insurance Agency of Afton, McCready Motors in Norwich, DTC Delhi Telephone Company, Superior Heating and Air Duct Cleaning of Sydney, and the McDonald's restaurants in Sydney and Norwich. So again, thanks for tuning in today to episode 80 with longtime local basketball coach Mac Culpepper. Great to dive into his history, his background, and just hear about why he loves the game. So much passion from Coach Mac. So, okay, this is episode 80 with Mac Culpepper. Let's get into it right here on the Nate Lull Podcast. Hey, everybody. Today is episode 80 right here on the Nate Lull Podcast. Welcome back. I always appreciate you checking back. And make sure you can go back in the archives anytime. With 80 interviews now in the books, there's a lot of great stuff. Maybe you missed something. So make sure you check back on the website or Apple or Spotify, wherever you listen, and listen back. So again, I am your host, Nate Lull. Today, I'm excited to welcome my good friend to the studio, longtime local coach at the high school and college level, and AAU, I should say, Mac Culpepper. So Coach, thanks for coming in today. This is great.
Well, I'm excited to be here. A little nervous, being honest, but we'll get through it. Won't hit me with a technical.
No technicals in here. Otherwise, we would have had a few coaches tossed out maybe. So, but, you know, I wanted to start off with normally in the spring and the summer. Of course, we're into fall now, but you would have been coaching AAU. And most recently, you've been at the Boys and Girls Club with your team. And you've had a lot of great local athletes on those teams, including the Campbell sisters from Franklin, a lot of Tri-Valley kids, Hannah Johnson from Oneonta. What's it been like for you not having that outlet this past summer?
I miss it. It's in my blood. And I just miss being in the gym, being with, you know, my other coaches and, you know, just walking up and down the court, barking. And, you know, helping and I just miss it. You know, like I said, it's been a part of me. The players have been a part of me and not seeing them. A lot of them are going into their senior year, you know, chatting with them about what their plans are. It's more than, you know, X's and O's.
Now, I know that you're someone who cares a lot about the players on a personal level. Now, being that everyone has kind of been apart, have you been able to stay in touch, make phone calls, offer advice, even from a distance?
I have. I've been in touch with a few. Some have gotten back to me. Some I've kind of pursued them out, and I've got to finish it up because I know college applications have should be out probably in about another 30 days if they haven't already. So, but I'm kind of one of those, I kind of leave it up to the players and because I don't want to be overbearing and so on.
Can you tell us currently about your college class that you teach? I think that's one thing that you and I have chatted about before, but I don't know a ton about it and just how you got into that.
Well, I teach two courses up at the State University College in Oneonta. And I've been doing it for about, I think, 10 years. One is the New York State Coaching Certification, and the other class is Sport in American Society. And I really enjoy the coaching because, as I tell the players, yes, there's the book, and yes, there's a state handbook, but my experience tops all of that because that's really what it all boils down to is experience. And I've pretty much, as I told them, witnessed it all except maybe death. So, you know, it's been a great ride. I love it. A lot of students stay in touch with me. I just try to make them realize that, as I like to say, outside of mom, dad, grandmother, grandfather, the fifth best word out there is coach. So I just love it, and I try to share that with them.
Is there a moment in the class, a student that you can think of that had the class and has stayed in touch with you and has gone on and has become a successful coach at all?
I've had a few, and it's just nice, and they've all come back and said a lot what we do. I make them do a five-day lesson plan, and a few of them have used it for an interview. I mean, that's just an edge when you walk in and you have a five-day lesson plan, and they look at that, and they see that you've given it some thought and so on. So it's been a good ride with a lot of my students, wrestling coaches, volleyball, dancing, cheerleading, just all types of students doing all types of athletic things.
Now, you've been a coach at a variety of different levels, and we'll dive into your story here in a minute. But one thing I like to ask coaches who have been through it all, as you have, what's your advice to a young coach that is just looking to get into it, looking to get their feet wet? I know I've talked to a bunch recently that are interested in getting started, but maybe they don't really know how. So what's your initial advice?
Well, my experience was first watching. The main thing, like I tell my coaching class, is know your craft. Know it. Inside out, be able to teach it right-handed, be able to teach it left-handed. I can teach an individual how to shoot the basketball left-handed. I won't put the ball in my hand. You know, I'll fake it. But just have answers, because today's generation, they need answers. They want answers. And there's various ways of learning. And a lot with today's, in my opinion, generation is observation. So being able to show them. But know your sport. Find a college coach or some type of coach and just follow them. You know, surround yourself with coaches that, because it's what I tell my class, surround yourself with coaches that know as much or more than you do. And that's what made my career with the AAU very, very successful. You can't do better than what I have working with me. So you take advantage of it. Maybe 20 years ago, I'd have a different attitude. Hey, I got it. I know what I'm doing. Today, no.
Now, Coach, I know a lot of athletes that I have covered here have gone to you for individual training. And is that something you still offer and really enjoy? I know everybody that went to you just felt like they got so much out of that one-on-one time with you.
Well, like I tell my students, all of us have a niche, and mine is teaching the sport. I just grew up in a time back in the 60s where they would cut you if you couldn't make a left-handed layup. And today, it's a different story. We're not going to get into that, but it's just different. So I may not be the greatest X's and O's, but fundamentals is my bag and always has been. I can just look and diagnose quickly why that individual missed a shot or whatever. It's just a gift I think I have and so on. And I've been exhibiting it. The matter of fact, as I was coming through Sydney, the first young man that did tutoring was from Sydney, Jerry Warner. Boy, he was good. And I've had some other good ones. I don't want to leave anybody out, but I've had some good ones. And my coaching style isn't for everybody, my teaching style. It takes somebody that's willing to let me be who I am, and I'm loud. You know, I wish I could be quiet every season. I always say to myself, no technicals and, you know, calm. You know, I'd love to be maybe like Lee Fisher or somebody, but that's just not me. I see something that I think is unjust, you know, not fair, and I just jump on it, I pounce on it. And was around the league long enough, some officials could deal with me, could talk to me. We carried on a conversation all game long. Nobody would know about the new ones. We're a little different.
Before we jump into your history, I guess on that one-on-one point, I know a lot of athletes that I talked to just recently that did training with you maybe were nervous when they first went in because of your volume, I guess you could say. But
yes,
the end result I found was that everybody said that they really enjoyed your style by the time they got used to it.
Yes, I have some newcomers this year, and down the road you find out the first session they were reconsidering. I always like parents to be around when I tutor so they can see. And parents know if I'm a bully or if I'm just loud. You know, everywhere I've been from the Boys and Girls Club, they know I'm loud, but they appreciate me. And when I did Catskill Mountains back with Krista Porter, I was loud. And, You know, maybe there's some stories there I might share with you. Some parents weren't sure if they wanted their daughter to play for me. But those parents that were there as their kid was trying out again said, hey, sit back and watch him. Just sit back. And I have my style. And once the kids figure it out, then I'll ease off, you know. But I'll probably say it a lot. And I tell my coaching classes all the time, athletes will only give you 50%. You've got to get the other 50% out of them, or maybe 30% to make it 80%. As I like to say, there's not too many Michael Jordans out there. Once a decade, you'll get a Michael Jordan that gives you 100% in practice and gives you 100% in a game. So that's just the way the athlete, if they can get by with 50%, that's what they're going to give you. And you get what you deserve if you don't make them work harder.
Coach, where does your journey begin? How did you start coaching, and what was your playing days like before that?
It started back in 1969. I was a senior in high school. My next door neighbor, Joe Melboff, Biddy basketball. And they didn't have a coach. And they knew I played basketball, and they asked me would I coach the team, because they didn't have anybody. And his father would have done it, but he wasn't a basketball person. He was a bowler, a professional low-level bowler. So, but he would have made it work if they didn't find anybody. So I said, yeah, okay. And that's where it started. And even back in Biddy basketball, I used to get technicals. But I had some real good players. And it's just, I don't know, teaching fundamentals, pushing ball handling. And we'll maybe talk about that too, my philosophy. But that's where it started. And then I went to college in Syracuse, Onondaga, and made time to come back, and it just kind of grew from there. And then in this area, it all started. You can all blame Tony Dreyel. He gave me my break. He gave me my break. Seventh grade coach, and then the next year, we went undefeated. The next year, assistant coach with Eric Haight on the freshman team.
Now, did you grow up local? Were you from this area?
I grew up in Canastota, New York. And it's a small little Italian village. At that time, we had the highest or the largest graduation class, 125, 728, somewhere around there. And this year would have been our 50th, but obviously we couldn't get together. And just a great little village. I appreciate it now more than I did growing up. Everybody knew everybody. I couldn't do anything walking home. My mom would know about it before I hit the gate. And I'd come in the house. Hi, Mom. Hi, Mac James. Anything you want to tell me? No. And then about maybe 5 minutes later, oh, that's funny. So-and-so called me and told me you got in a fight downtown or something like that. So everybody knew. I was a little skinny boy and small Italian village, and I was always eating at my friend's house. Yeah, you a skinny boy. Eat. So just great people took care of me. I was adopted from birth, and my mom was a foster parent. My mom and dad were foster parents, and so on. So great life. I'll say it now. My mom is the smartest person I ever met. She believed in common sense. And that's what I was raised on. That's what I do today, and so on. But Mac James, there's more PhDs getting hit by cars by not stopping by, you know, the curb and looking both ways. Don't be one of them.
After college, how did you find your way to the Oneonta area?
I graduated from Manhattan College in 1975. I had some opportunities to go on, and I chose not to. So I said, well, I'm going to go in the Peace Corps. So I signed up, did everything, and I don't know, a couple of stages before the end, they gave me this laundry list of shots that I had to take. And I said, ain't happening. So I told them no. And so they convinced me to do VISTA, Volunteers in Service to America, like the Peace Corps, but in the United States. So I did that for a year down south, matter of fact, Lake Charles, Louisiana. And that's been in the news lately because of bad weather and so on. Spent a year down there, got accepted at various Syracuse, Colgate, and SUNY Oneonta. I decided to get my master's in education, and went back to my high school, and I said, because I really wanted to go to Syracuse, but I wanted to go somewhere where masters meant something, and they all said Oneonta. So that's how I ended up in Oneonta.
So you said you were working with Eric Haight, so that would have been, I'm trying to think of the
timetable. Roughly, okay, I got 75 to 76 was Vista, and then I came to Oneonta in 76, and that year I did junior high or seventh grade, so I had to be around 78 or 79, somewhere around there, 1978 or 1979.
And that would have been at Franklin.
No, he was at Oneonta.
Oh, he was? Okay.
Yeah, Eric was at Oneonta. And then Betty Ursady, the athletic director at Franklin, who was the best athletic director I ever worked under, she called Tony. And the years I worked for Oneonta, I didn't get paid. And that's what I try to get across to kids today. It's not about money. You know, if you get the experience, jump at it. So long story short, to the best of my knowledge, I was the first person he recommended to Betty Ursady. It was a good experience, and I paid my dues and kept my nose clean.
Now, when you decided to go to Franklin, was that for a boy's job or a girl's job?
It's funny you should say that. As it started off, I was being interviewed for the boys' JV. And I can see everything as if it happened an hour ago. So we're just about getting ready to wrap up the interview. And Betty said to me, "Mac, any chance might you be interested in varsity?" And as soon as she said varsity, I said, "Yes!" And then she finished it, girls basketball. But I just heard varsity, and that's all I wanted to do. So it started there, and I had a great bunch of gals. And it was funny, back in the 70s, late 70s, the girls' season started in January. So they knew about me, watched the boys practice. They would come in and sit. Robin Shepherd, Lori Barstow, Lori Porkchop Haney, they would come and watch. So they kind of got a sneak preview about what I was all about. So, that's how it all started.
So you get the Franklin girls varsity job. Had you ever thought that you would ever transition to coaching girls?
No. No. Never crossed my mind, but now I wouldn't have it any other way. And I've been offered to coach some boys, and no.
So how were those early years in Franklin? And, you know, I don't want to skip ahead at all, but when did you realize that a young Denise McNeely was roaming the halls of Franklin?
By accident. I liked it back in those days. I wish it would get back there. When I started the girls, it was modified in varsity, no JV. So I had Denise in eighth grade. And it's kind of interesting. You remember what you want to remember, I guess. But even as an eighth grader, she was a heck of a player. Back in those days, you had to keep records of how many quarters an individual played to get a varsity letter. You had to be on top of it. So after every game, I made sure, you know, Matt Culpepper played, you know, two quarters, you know, person B played one. You had, because it was important. So as a eighth grader, she didn't start, but she had the fifth most playing time. Ninth grade, she averaged just under 20 points. We were struggling at first, and she was by far our best player. And a captain came up to me, Karen Costello, because I would always tell Denise, "You got to shoot the ball, you got," and she just, you know, gave to upperclassmen. Karen Costello came to me and says, "Coach, you got to tell Denise to shoot the ball." and I said, I have been. Well, somehow the light came on, and the rest is history. She's a big part of my life, and I'll always be indebted to her. Just a sweet player. I coached her hard. I probably couldn't coach her that hard today, but I coached her hard. Her parents were good, and only once her mom got mad at me that I can recall. But Denise came to play. She was one of those Michael Jordans. Practice, game time, just a great player. Great player.
Of course, for our listeners, we'll have a lot of younger listeners. We've brought up Denise multiple times here on the podcast, and we had her daughters, Megan and Morgan Perry, on here. And Denise was in the room for that interview. I couldn't get her to say anything.
That's her.
you know, just a player that everyone talks about wherever I go, even though it was 35 plus years ago. So I don't want to put you on the spot here, but I mean, I've had multiple people say best player I've ever seen on the female side locally.
She's one of them.
One of them, right.
You know, generations, each decade has its own player. But Denise could play today. And it was funny. She averaged 35 and a half points for me. And she didn't like being posted up. Hated it. I wanted to post her up. She didn't, and she said no. I says, all right, fine. And no three-point shot. But she just had the two best jump shooters that I recall, and I'll leave it to the Tri Valley. Davenport was strong, mm-hmm. and South Courtright. I coached a couple of South Courtright kids, but it was Krista Porter and Denise McNeely. Denise's nickname was Stinger. There was an Atlanta Hawk player, and his name escapes me right now, but his nickname was Stinger. And I remember, you know, coming home from a ball game or practice and then watching an NBA game or something. And this athlete just shot the ball just like Denise. And that's where her nickname came from. And next day in practice, I have this thing about nicknames. I don't know. Just, I don't know where I got it from. And it has to come natural. Probably the only one that I missed and never got a nickname for was Jordan Beers. I had her as a 7th and 8th grader. But I'm sure I would have come up with something. But, you know, it's just, you know, Campbells have nicknames. That's just who I am. I don't know. Something happens and that's it. They're labeled. I had a player. She's a veterinarian in this area. And I don't know. She tripped a fell or something like that in practice. And I nicknamed it Grace. And it, you know, it just sticks and so on. So, and the kids, they're fine with it. I've never had anybody that looked at me and said, Coach, no, don't call me that. And so we had a little girl, Nicole, just a little thing. I brought her up. Gosh, she was little. And I looked at her and I said to myself, she's like a pint. No, she's less than, she's a half pint. So that was her nickname. Her whole, I see her today, hey, half pint. And I usually ask the kids, do you mind if I still call you? And it's coach, your coach. My players have always defended me. You know, it's, that's our coach. And so on. I'm fiery and so on. But they can't act like me. There's a line there. And I know, you know, administrators will say, well, your kids will copy. No, I was raised different. Child cannot do what an adult does. And I tell my team that. So I don't know. Many years of coaching at various different places, I'm hard-pressed to tell you my players have gotten maybe three technicals. They just, no.
Coaching Denise, I look back at that time often, and we just had Ray Preston on not too long ago. I think about how good your teams were. I think about Davenport and Morris and Mount Upton with Bob Conway. Yep. I know Unitigo had some great players. I mean, when you look back on that era, what a great time for local girls basketball.
Yeah, they could play. Most of those teams, if not all, would be highly successful today. I truly believe that. Because back in those days, just fundamentals and practicing outside. Denise and I would practice outside. We couldn't get into school. It wasn't uncommon for me to see Denise roll off 6, 7, 8 shots in a row. I tell the kids that I tutor now that I was crazy back then. I used to sit in a lawn chair outside, and I would tell Denise, before it's over, you've got to make 10 shots in a row. 10 jump shots in a row. At least probably 13 feet back, 13 back. And she get up to 7 or 8, miss, got to start all over again. Today, I probably would be coach abuse. I had a young lady out of Unitigo decades ago, Harris. Katia was the next best. I think she could consistently hit 7 in a row. Because when it's all said and done, I don't care what offense you run, you got to put the ball in the hole. Got to put it in a hole. And it's a lost art. Kids cannot score the basketball. They can shoot it, but they can't score it. And not enough time, in my opinion, is on shooting the basketball, footwork, getting squared up. And but, you know, it's philosophy, what you believe in. And that's what I believe in. It's, I call it the 1-2-3s, ABCs of shooting a basketball. I had tons of success, and I miss them so much, the 5th and 6th graders at the Boys and Girls Club. And all I did with those young kids were three things. Taught them how to catch the basketball, how to pass the basketball, and how to dribble. That's it. We would rebound out the basketball outlet and not run the floor, sprint the floor. I'll decide what sprinting is for everybody. And I believe in practice, when parents dropped their kids off, we had chairs lined up around the baseline sideline because I encourage parents to stay. And so the years I worked with the little fifth, we were highly successful. And the coaches, opponents would always say to me, Mac, how do you get your girls to run? I just kind of give them the look and say, I tell them, I said, you want to come to one of my practices. But where some places thought I was mean, Oneonta and Unitego parents and Cooperstown, you know, they were fine. That's Mac. And my kid's fine. You know, I think it's slowly coming back a little bit, the old school way. And I stay in touch with my players. They're high school kids now. But dribbling, we never did any, and we don't do it with my older kids. We don't do dribbling drills in their strong hand. Everything we do is weak hand. My tutoring, we don't dribble in our strong hand. It's a weak hand. It's what you can't do that will come back and bite you. That's what I believe. So if I did soccer, it would be the same thing. It's what you can't do.
I want to hear the rest of your journey because I know that there's some other stops on the coaching journey after Franklin, and I'm not exactly sure of the timeline here. I know there's been some other stops.
Yeah, after there was a year in Unitego, then Colgate, and then Skenevis, and then it was either back to Franklin and then to Morris or Morris Franklin, and Franklin ended it, obviously. Did some volunteer work at Oneonta State, the men's program, and the women's program. But pretty much good and bad. But I don't dwell on the bad. Oneonta was in there, too, because Oneonta was 1 year. I'm not sure where it fits in. But I've been around. If I could do it again, there's probably some places I would not have coached at. But you live and you learn, and everything is a life experience, so you learn.
Was it almost fun in a way to be involved in a bunch of different communities, meeting different people and players, and or was it you'd rather stay at one place maybe if you could go back?
The biggest thing is when you go into a program, you need time to develop it. So we'll leave it at that. Some places I didn't last long, but you need time. As I tell my coaching class, I look at them, and I think I have roughly, I don't know, 27, something like that. And I tell them, out of this group, let's say of 27, maybe one or two of you will walk into a winning program. You're picking up a team. Now you're the head coach of a team that was 0 for a season or maybe one or two wins. So you need to do things your way. You've got to not only sell the players, but you got to sell the parents. You're the new sheriff in town, and it takes time. And everybody wants to win, but it takes time. And I don't care how good you are, players. I tell my coaches that, my future coaches. I'll be honest. I said there's not too many Lee Fishers. Suco's got one. Ian Burns, Alex Brannon. You know, coaches that I look at from afar, and it's funny, a lot of them are soccer coaches for whatever reasons. And I always tell Ian, when I see him up on campus, you're the man. And Alex Brannon from Oneonta High School, I don't think has. I told his wife one time, I have a ton of respect for him. In the classroom, what he did with my kids and what I see he produces in soccer. Lee Fisher can coach a toothpick if they're willing to listen. And that's what it boils down to today is listening, you know. This week's paper in my coaching class, I asked the kids to tell me what the lyrics of Tim McGraw's Be Humble and Kind means. I love that song. First time, and I'm not big into country western, even though I saw Garth Brooks. Only concert I've ever seen was last year. Never been to a concert. He is special. But I heard the song. It just made me think of coaching. Be humble and kind. So it'll be interesting to see what the papers read like and so on. So coaches need to be humble and kind. And because it's not you, it's players. You got to have the horses. You know, my man Bob Knight couldn't win. Dean Smith couldn't win if he was coaching a team of me. You need the players, but the players need your brains. You know, this is why it works with us, with the Boys and Girls Club. We've got the players, and, you know, between the three of us, we get it done. We get it done, and so on.
Mac, I had Norwich girls coach Josh Bennett on a couple months ago now. Are you familiar with him?
A little bit.
He seems to take, and this is something I asked him, he seems to take a lot of heat for his coaching style. He is loud and aggressive, but he loves his girls, and it was interesting to ask him that. And I wanted to ask you, and I think you've explained it a little bit already, that you just have your style, and at the end of the day, you love the kids more than anybody. But you just have that style. Do you feel like you have been misunderstood at times during your career?
Absolutely. But some of it's my fault. Some of it's my fault. New coming in, being loud, being a minority, it's just different. This is the 80s I'm talking about. And for the most part, Franklin took me in like I was their adopted son. I was still a graduate student. Families, if they found out I was hungry, because maybe a late practice and the dining hall was closed or whatever. If they found out that I was hungry and didn't swing by their place to eat, they would get mad. Janice Smith, Mac, what's another plate? Donna Jackson, Shepherd family, they fed me. Food was back then I could eat. but just open arms after every home basketball game. Denise's mom, God bless her, would stick her head in the huddle because we get together and chant and all that stuff. She would say, Mac, you coming over? Yes. And then I'd get back. And I'm a breakfast guy. So she would fix bacon and eggs and home fries, toast, all that stuff for myself. And at the time, my girlfriend, who became my wife. So they took care of me. It was funny. There was a situation at the Boys and Girls Club where a family wasn't sure about me, and because they heard I yelled and screamed and all that, and they went to talk to Patria Delberto. Love Patria. I call her my boss. She doesn't like it. And they explained, and Patria's great. She listened, obviously. And finally, when the lady finished up, she said, "We want nobody else but Matt coaching these girls. Watch practice. In an hour, you'll change your mind." Sure enough. Another great story was back in Catskill Mountain tryouts. And there was this real good athlete from Oneonta. And the father sitting in among parents were their kids that played for me for years. I never believed in giving anybody a spot. I would always say no. Well, I played for you the last 2 years. Try out. And so there was a father. I was getting on his daughter because great daughter. Had a great career in Oneonta. I thought she could give me more. I barked at her. She a little startled, but she was okay. Dad was edging on a seat and just getting tense and something to the effect if he yells at my daughter one more time. So a family from Cooperstown, Leonard, just touched his knee and said, "He's fine. Just watch. Just watch. Your daughter will be eating out of his hand in an hour. Just watch. Just watch." And so they kind of watched him and stuff, and she ended up being a great player for me. Leonard's were great. They were a great family. The youngest one, when she broke the school record, I went to see her at Cooperstown. I'll never forget it. And I tried to sneak in, but she saw me. And there was a TV station from Utica was there to film her. But she saw me and ran from the team's area to me and gave me a hug. And the coach is yelling, "But the TV station, she said, "They can wait."
I will say, Coach, that when I see you at a game, and you're great about going around and supporting the girls that you coach at AAU, they beeline it for you as soon as they see you. I think it's such a cool thing that they have that connection with you, and they're so excited that you come to their games and support them.
Good observation. They know I love them. I am who I am. They deal with me. My players have always dealt with me better, I think, than adults. And so on. But they know when I'm being mean and stuff. And I love it sometimes. I bark at my players and I get so wound up. They'll look at me. Dana was good. "What's my name?" "Don't matter." "Coach, what's my name?" because they know I don't know their name when I'm barking at them so much. It's just kind of funny. They know how to break the ice. A newcomer came from Walton, and she knows who she is. I had tutored her, I guess, first practice. I'm all over, just all over. And Dana that night, either call or text, or the how they do stuff today, and said, "Welcome to the club. We all have been there." So they know, you know, and I yell at the camp bells. I yell at my kids if they were playing for me. You know, that's just who I am, and I don't know. I just don't know any better, but they know, you know, I'm there. I give them a hug. I'm there for anything as much as I can be. So they're fine. They're fine. They play hard for me. Hannah Johnson one time rolled her ankles real, real bad. I said, "You're done. Sit down." You know, mom came over, iced her up, and all of a sudden she comes down, taps me, and I'm ready to go in. And I look at her, and her mom looks, she wants to play, put her back in, you know, and she very easily could have sat out in the tournament, but says, no, you know, I like to think they want to play for me and for the team, their teammates.
I've had several of your AAU girls tell me that I should ask you what some of your favorite sayings are. Apparently your sayings have become very legendary over the years, of different things that you just like to call things and
well,
yell out.
I don't know. I have a saying with discipline. My coaching class knows that. Discipline is doing what has to be done, when it has to be done, how it has to be done, and doing it that way all the time. Robert Montgomery Knight. A great line that I love, and I don't use this word around my athletes, but I tell my students to write it down, and there'll be a time you'll use it. You can't fix stupid, you know, and so on. I'd never call an athlete stupid. That's one thing I warn my future coaches about. You don't do that. You can think it, but you don't verbalize it. I found another word that I use: not smart. That's not smart, you know, and so on. I don't know. They probably remember more than I do. I have a ton of them. It's just over time. You know, some kids, I could scream and yell at Kayla Campbell until the cows came home, and she just look at me like, "You done?" Those are my kind of players. Dana's like that. I just deal well with those type of players. You know, I bark at them, and then my big thing, I scream and I go two thumbs up, and then I wink at them. And, you know, just that smile comes on their face. To me, as I tell my future coaches, that's what it's all about, is that smile. I don't know. They make fun of me. One time I was teaching something, and one of the Perrys turned around and just flattened me. I was too close. So the teammates yell there, "You killed him! You killed him!" I'm on the floor, and she felt so bad. And I said, "I'm fine. It was my fault. I got too close." She just pivoted and was heading up the floor and just leveled me like a football tackle. You know, they take care of me. Their families take care of me. I had cancer. And families, one family in particular, Musas from Unitigo, drove me to practice, wanted me to put my energy into coaching and not driving. And they didn't want my wife driving. Just when I had cancer, Bonnie Johnson with the older team, God bless her, I can never repay her. Each family took a Wednesday. Every other Wednesday I had to go and get chemo. Well, Bonnie set it up where every Wednesday when we came back, there was a hot meal. And that went on, I think, for 12, 15 weeks. They didn't have to. She didn't have to. You can't pay them back. Homemade cards. I still have them. And when I got inducted into the Tri-Valley, my team from the Boys and Girls Club was there. I still had the poster that they put up, or that they drew, and so on. Things like that mean a lot to me. And there's a side a few get to see. You know, I put on the John Wayne, you know, and some of them, they know how to get to me. Campbells know how to get to me. Marissa and them know how, and Dana surely does, and Han, they all do. You know, they know, you know, just listen to what he says, not how he says it.
And Coach, how are you feeling these days? I think it's been a couple of years since you've been 100% back, right?
Yes, 3 years. I just had a checkup last month, about maybe 4 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, and all is good. And you're never the same that chemo gets in your body, but I'm alive, and I don't complain because I'm alive. I lost my brother recently. I lost my best friend from high school recently. So, you know, I got a lot to live for. I got a wife. I got grandkids. I got Caitlin. I got my son, Brand. And a dog. Got my players. You know, it's good. You know, I they stay in touch. Christmas cards. It's nice. They welcome me into their new family. Most of them are married, whatever, and they're there.
I was texting with your daughter Caitlin yesterday, and we were having a laugh. And I was kind of, you know, picking. And I said, "What should I ask? What would you ask him?" And she said, "I would be interested to hear what he would say to." You know, they played a variety of different sports, and just what that was like for you to watch them play soccer or Irish competitive dancing. I mean, really things that weren't basketball, and how that was for you as a dad.
Sports, I worked with my son Brandon 1 hour. He went home crying, "Dad yells too much." I tried working with Kate for 1 hour. She went home crying to her mom, "He's mean. He yells too much." So everybody thought I was going to force basketball on my kids, and I never did. My son played lacrosse, which I knew nothing about. I love lacrosse. My daughter played soccer. Knew nothing about soccer. Kind of learned quickly. And Irish dancing. Obviously, I knew nothing about Irish dancing. I can't dance. And so it was kind of nice to see them do something and excel. And, both went on to play at junior college. The sport, and it just was nice, you know, kind of to sit back and truly be a parent. And I don't remember my son's lacrosse coach, but he was very good in handling my son, as was Miller in JV and in the youth soccer. A lot of it was Cookie John Cook. You know, it was funny. John Cook, just ton of respect for him, and they were playing some team, and the team wasn't playing, and they were down at, I don't know, whatever, this quarters or whatever, like 4 or 5 goals, at least 4. And John gets them in a corner, and he's talking to him softly. And I just remember looking at my wife and others and saying, "If that was me, you could hear me next county over." And John, just his demeanor. Anyway, they came back and beat the team after being down 4 or 5 goals to 0. But just great, great girls that wanted to be coached hard. And John's style was, as I like to call it, is Mother Teresa, soft-spoken. Where me, like I said, Bob Knight, balls would have been punted. So on. So, you know, Kate had, John was good for my daughter, as was, as my daughter calls him, Miller. They helped shape my daughter. In dancing, she's had some good teachers, and they were tough on her. There was a gentleman, I can't think of his name, but he was awful tough on my daughter, but he made her the champion Irish dancer she was.
It's interesting that you bring up John Cook. We're talking about, I think a lot of people will identify with the official John Cook, the referee, but we are talking about younger John Cook, who was, we were talking before we went on the air, an absolute soccer star in the Tri-Valley in the early 2000s for Lawrence. And went on to play at Colgate. That's a great story.
Yeah, All-American at Colgate.
I mean, we'll have to get him on here at some point. He is a state trooper now. He is still local, but yeah. I got a chance to play against him, and it was really a man against boys. And yeah. we had some guys I would consider men on our team, and they were still boys compared to him. Yeah. He was something else.
Good man. Just a good man.
Great player.
Yeah.
And a really nice guy, too. Yeah. So who were some of the coaches that you really enjoyed matching up against in your time?
Probably early on, Jim Weir probably tops the list. Early on, before he built his program, we probably won more. And then once he got things going, couldn't be touched. Joan Martin, always had problems with Morris. Size, I don't know what they had in the water. But size. Jim Johnson and Bob Conway, just great battles back in the day. just great battles. You know, I don't think I'm missing anybody, but because I'm primarily going with the Tri-Valley.
Yeah, heck of a list there.
Yeah, yeah. Just you had to come ready to play. Some programs had the edge on me. I had the edge on some of them. Just great battles. And back then, every team had a star. Every team. And you had to prepare for that star. We did. And I still, one of these days, I'm going to give what I have to Matt Campbell's dad, John. He runs the Franklin.
The Railroad Museum.
Yes. Yeah. I have stuff that nobody else has. Pictures, stats, and I had some stuff that I gave to Denise. But I have history that I know they don't have. For some reason, I'm a pack rat anyways. So I have a ton of stuff. When it's time for me to leave this earth, I'll make sure John gets it. I might give it to him beforehand. And just newspaper clippings. I don't know. We'll leave it at that. But I had a great ride. You know, another person I don't want to leave out that I coached, Shelly Miles from GMU. Mm-hmm. Coached her in AAU. I remember the first time I met her. We're working. And I think she was an eighth grader, and she made first team Tri-Valley or something like that. And I'm working with her tutoring first practice, and Mom's sitting on the bleacher, and I'm all over Shelly. And her mom's laughing.
Yeah.
So we took a water break. I walked by. Her mom was great. And what are you laughing? And she goes, "You're the first one that ever told her it's not good enough." I enjoyed coaching her. She was a challenge. She's the only one in AAU that averaged 20 points for me. And I've had some great players. I always forget her name, the young lady out of South Courtright that was an All-American at Cortland.
Oh, Jess Lang.
Yes, Jessica Lang. She just fell short. Everybody sat, but between you and me, because I know nobody else is listening, I didn't set Jesse Long and I didn't set Shelly Miles Long. You know, they had to take the turn, but it wasn't long.
Shelly was a year older than me at GMU.
Okay.
And just as I look back now, I'm like, what a great time to get to see her play three sports.
Yeah.
Unbelievable athlete. Yeah.
Quick story about Jessica. We were playing in Vermont, and I loved her family because they were her biggest fans. And so we're playing, and I've never had a player that had the range of Jessica. And she came down one time, and she took a shot, and I'm screaming at her. Like, what were you thinking? It went through the hole. Yeah! The father's on the edge of the bench. She's just laughing. What were you saying, coach? He goes, she was some player. She could pass the ball. She could score the ball. Could play defense. She was a joy to coach. I had the team she was on. They were good. Kelly Taggart. There was a little point guard from Davenport. There was a center from Davenport, too. I had some real good teams.
I'll have three questions. I think I'm going to have to add you to my list of we're going to have to do round two with you at some point because there's just too many stories that you have. So we'll wrap it up here with three questions. But while you're here, you brought her up before, but Jordan Beers, to have a chance to coach someone who goes over 2,000 points, amazing high school career, college career, and I know she started working with you at an early age. You got to have a Jordan or story or two here.
She was my manager in sixth grade, and Dad used to tell me, after every practice, she would go home and write the plays down. Sometimes we needed somebody to fill in. You usually grab your manager. So the first time we needed a player, Jordan, you want to play? Yeah. If she wasn't playing, she'd sit on the sideline, and she was paying attention. She's a sixth grader, paying attention. So you want to fill in? Yeah. Look, I'm going to run you at the point guard. And the play, she goes, I know the play. I said, you want dry run? No. And she ran it. Maybe another time we need a fill-in. Jordan, you want it? Yep. We'll put you at the two guard. We'll do a dry run to show you. No, I already know the play. She was amazing. She knew everything. Kids liked her because she could feed the post as a sixth grader. She was ready to play varsity in sixth grade. She really was. A sweet kid. I'm sure she'll tell you I probably yelled at her, but I don't remember. but just great family, just did everything as a seventh grader. And I was so proud And I brag about her in my coaching class because as an eighth grader, she made All-State. The only eighth grader in the state of New York that made All-State that year. The only eighth grader. And just so proud of that. We had a special relationship. I ask my players when I come, do you want to know if I'm in the gym? Some players do, some don't. And she said yes. So field house, I don't care wherever it was, I would always do my cat call that Dana tells you about. And I can't whistle. And I've kind of lost my voice from coaching. But she would hear that. And all she would do in the field house, packed, is just raise her thumb up, her hand up with her thumb up. Because she just wanted to know. And then as soon as the game was over, she'd find me. She was like a bloodhound, a beagle. Found me, gave me a hug, and I was like, get out of here. Get with your team, get with your family. But you can't force young people to do that kind of stuff. Either they want to or they don't. Because the parent could say, oh, there's Matt. Okay, I'll see him later. You know, so I'm very touched by it and humbled by it. So, because today, and you can't force kids to do anything they don't want to do. But Jordan was special, very, very special. I'm always asked, Jordan or Denise. Yeah. And I don't answer.
How could you? I mean,
nope. I love them both. Coached them both hard, and pretty good results.
Very good results. Well done. So our last two questions, fun questions. First one is, what's your favorite local spot to go out and eat?
I don't like to go out to eat much. My wife will tell you that. But when I do, I like Sloan's. And then when I'm in Albany, even though it's not local, it's Texas Roadhouse.
Good choices. Very good choices. And what are you watching on TV right now? That's the big one. Or are you a movie guy? Netflix? What are you watching?
Sports.
Oh, it's nice
Yankees.
To be back. Yeah.
Yeah. My wife doesn't get the TV. She'll tell you that. Just sports. You know, I just, in closing, I tell my class, and I've told others, when it's time to pass on, I hope it's at the end of the bench. Where they come down and nudge me and I just keep over. I love sports, always have. And right now it's the Yankees. My Giants aren't playing well. My Knicks stink. And
it's tough times.
Yeah, so the Rangers are going to get a good player and we're going to take off again.
I guess one more quick one. Have you had a favorite podcast episode that you've listened to so far? I know you send me a text once a week. I listen to this one. I love that coach. Anyone that stuck out to you?
You know, I guess any one of my former players, because they fit the song, Humble and Kind. You know, it's not about them. You know, as good as they are, Dana's a mega superstar in soccer, as is the Perrys. And you know, Dana played basketball for me and was a great role player. Yeah, she wasn't a great scorer, but she did everything else. Hannah's a great Johnson is a great athlete. I just you know, you haven't interviewed her, but you know, it's just the Perrys, you know, the Campbells. Talk about humble and kind, Judas Priest. And don't anybody be mistaken, Papa coaches them hard. Mm-hmm. He does not spare the rod. So I don't want to hear that garbage. So I don't know. Yeah, it's just my former players and how they perceive me and so on. And I hope they all go on and have the best senior year or junior year in college, you know. Get to college, get a degree.
Well, Coach, this was great. We'll have you back again. We'll take another trip down memory lane. So
I'd love to.
Thanks for coming in. This has been great.
Okay, thank you.
This is episode 80 on the Nate Lull Podcast with longtime local girls basketball coach, AAU coach, Matt Culpepper. Again, big thanks to him. Always make sure you're checking back. There's a lot in the archives, and there'll be a lot new interviews coming up soon right here on the Nate Lull Podcast.
You've been listening to the Nate Lull Podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.